have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 0.6 seconds remaining.
The brilliant shot. Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He scores! Australia have got it!
Australian NBA, I don't want you. It's one of the most stupid things that they could do.
The fucking sports.
Like you type NBA.com and it goes to sports.
It defaults you to the local one, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Delhi got three pointers, and that's
woo,
nice.
Good on you, Delhi. Did Aaron Baines start? Let's get fucked with that.
The word is in the general NBA media is that Milwaukee are very, very happy with their Delhi investment.
I think for
what they got for him. So
they're playing all right too. Have we started?
Why not?
Because nobody wants to hear this shit, possibly.
Yeah, well, like we're recording for our audience. Really, we could just talk on good mics and headphones and just you and I hear it. But then
basically,
I wouldn't get sledged as much. So it was interesting to see. I love watching young players sort of have these games where they sort of can glimpse their potential. It's always a really exciting coaching during those games. Where you just get a player and you just like, look, I know you can do X, and just that game where they unlock it, and it's just brilliant. Because did you see Giannis take it to LeBron the other night?
No, I didn't see that.
I just watched the highlights, and it was just sort of like he woke up going, you know, I reckon I can take it to LeBron James today. It was just like, not everything worked, but man, that dude has a wide range of skills. And it might encourage Brett Brown to just not give a fuck and play Ben Simmons as a 6'8" massive point guard when he comes back. You know, rather than going, well, you really should be playing the three.
Well, that's definitely that's he said. I saw there was a story on NBA on the New Zealand side, I think it was. So it's probably written for the Australian side, saying that Simmons could be back in his, you know, by January, and if he's back by then, which is a worry because he's got the sort of fracture that you want not to be rushed back, but when he comes back, he'll come back as a point guard.
Mm. So, well, that'd be actually a good situation for him to come back to, because then, the season's basically done and dusted for them by that stage.
The season was done and dusted on game one, yeah. Let's face it.
Yeah, except not really. Like this is an excellent season for them. Like they're finding out the shape of their side this year rather than just treading water. Like it's like, yes, we want this guy. You know, Noel and Okafor are completely expendable. Who can we trade them to? We need a point guard. I just find that it's almost like, you know, they've thrown something out in the water and they actually know which way they're swimming now.
Yeah, they're 2 years away now instead of being 5 years away.
Mm. Unlike the Timberwolves. And, like, I really thought the Timberwolves would just jump this year, and I keep waiting for it to happen and it just doesn't seem to be.
They're not improving in the ways that you'd think a young team under Tibbs would. In terms of defense, they are slowly getting their shit together in terms of not completely collapsing in the third quarter. Mm. They're collapsing in the second or the fourth quarter instead now. But, I mean, they're 5-13.
The only thing I'll
they're 14th. They're in 14th place and they suck.
The only thing I'll say with that, though, is we ran one season, me and a couple of the senior players came up with this really different, really complicated way of defending. And obviously our preseason's a lot shorter than an NBA preseason, but like, you know, we practiced it at preseason and we went out and we used it sort of sporadically in games to try it. And there, it wasn't till sort of this one game halfway through the season where it just, there was this point where everyone had gotten enough that it was effective. And then all of a sudden, for the rest of that season, we just smashed teams with our defense. And we actually went from being, because we weren't quite sure of the system, we were actually letting in soft tries that we wouldn't if we were running a conventional defense. And I wonder whether there's a little bit of, it takes a while to learn, you know, whether Tibbs is not running a really simple defense, whether he's running quite a complicated, you know, complicated concepts, and it's just taking them a little while to grasp, because they just seem to go to sleep on defense for big patches.
Yeah. They've got the same record as the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah. Man, those Nets, I never would have thought I said this, but the Nets are a lovable team. They're just so feisty.
they're not prepared to take fuck off for an answer.
No.
They absolutely should be taking fuck off for an answer.
Well, man, they beat the Clippers this week, and then the Clippers, that same Clippers team went out and destroyed Cleveland today. So
yeah, and this is the Clippers site. So this was a good game, and I watched bits of this one. I got sucked into a fairly terrible Thursday night football game instead. So I missed it, but it was pretty well decided by the second quarter. The Cavs were just not in the race, and the Clips were coming off a bunch. It was like three or four straight losses where they'd look fucking horrible. So it was a real, it was a clear statement game for them. And, yep, you know, every game exists in a unique context, you know, of who you've played and who your opponents just played, whether they've just flown in and whether they give a fuck and who's resting and who's on minutes restrictions and stuff. So I don't think you'd go out and say, well, the Clippers are better than the Cavs, but they're certainly not worse than the Cavs.
I would have thought that the Cavs would be a little bit like Golden State, where Golden State are probably more of a chance to lose against Orlando than they are against Cleveland or Houston or, you know, one of the contender sides.
It's funny you say that. Did you catch the game later on the season?
No, I really want to watch that game though, because I just saw it went to double overtime.
Yeah, it was a fucking crack. So this is Houston at the Golden State Warriors. And Houston took them to double overtime and beat them. And it was really, a lot of it was down as friend of the pod, I think it was Elwood Smithio pointed out that Pat Beverly being back, and I hadn't realised that he'd snuck back in the lineup, made a huge difference to their defence. You know, they didn't.
Yeah.
They weren't going for, I mean, they're up to like 130 odd points in double overtime, but that was in double overtime. That wasn't in regulation.
Yeah, that's not extreme for, no, like, man, the Golden State put 150 points in regulation down in a game the other day.
Yeah,
so
they put 149 on the Lakers, who'd beaten them previously. So it was just a really great shootout. But of course, the big statistical notice was that in overtime, KD sort of quietly reversed out of the game. So you could hear the footsteps coming from the horizon in the cloud of dust, and then going closer, 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 burst through the door to say, KD ain't clutch! Before he's beaten to death with his own shoes.
I actually think that...
Dre should have been thrown out for trying to kick Beard in the head.
Oh my god!
He's still flailing
around. That is a worry. I actually think
he was already on a tech, and he probably should have got a flagrant and got the result in tech for that and tossed. But they were being very generous towards him.
I actually think every one of these losses though is good for Golden State. You know, I think they not the players.
I don't think it's particularly bad for them. I think it's good. I don't think anything that happens between now and, as long as they don't all die, and as long as they still win enough games to get the one seed, nothing that happens between now and May matters.
Yep.
And there's a lot of angst and derp and analytical nonsense about how their defense, the defensive efficiency isn't that great. It's kind of, you know, 10th or something in the league. But a lot of that's warped by their garbage time numbers when they're already up by 30 and then the bench units concede it until and they end up winning by, well, in the last, in their 12, in a, they won 12 in a row before they lost this last game to Houston. And they'd won on an average of like 17.8 points, I think was the figure. So you can see that they're getting up by 25 and then the bench is kind of conceding the last few points. So the defensive efficiency ends up suffering over the course of the minutes they're playing. But it's kind of, what's the matter? It's not, but the thing is that Charles Barkley was banging on and on and on the TNT because today's nationally televised games were on TNT. And the TNT panel are fucking tremendous. They're really entertaining, very clever. They all know their roles. And, of course, Chucky's role is to be the cranky old man shouting at clouds.
The Donald Trump of the NBA.
Well, I have to give credit to them because they did a straight after the election, the day after that Donald Trump won the election, they were on. And they don't usually shirk from social issues. And their opening bit before the tip was just 10 minutes on the election. And, of course, you got three black dudes and a white dude in terms of you got Eddie Johnson, who's the white guy, but you've got Shaq, you've got Chuck, and you've got Kenny the Jet Smith, the point guard of the of those Houston teams that won in the mid-90s. And he's probably the most progressive of all the three black dudes. So that they spoke really honestly and openly about how they felt about it and how they thought that America should go forward. And even Chuck, who I've always pegged as a bit of a Republican, he's, you know, absolutely not. Ernie Johnson is a Republican, but even he couldn't vote for Trump. And he was saying, he had some, so it was interesting to see even the, you know, white conservative, it was just such a, at that stage, obviously, I think we're all in horrible shock that this had happened, and it was actually the first bit of election coverage that I'd been able to watch without just running out the room going, oh, fuck, I don't even want to know about it. But it was just so beautifully done and so honest and so great. So anyway, I'm a big rat for the TNT crew anyway, but Chuck was on, and he's been riding Golden State ever since they came into existence. And they let him have his rant and they're just gently baiting him and gently baiting him and gently baiting him. And they finished with I actually tweeted at one point, today we are all Kenny the Jet, because he was basically laughing at Chuck for saying, you know, they're just girly on defense, you know, they're going to lose because they don't play defense properly. And the last point, so someone tweeted something in and they put that up as the, on the screen is saying, you know, NBA GMs have got such a challenge. Do they pick a team that will win, or do they pick a team that will make Charles Barkley happy? And they went to break on that.
Well, it's funny. I've had a couple of hours in planes recently, so I finally finished the 7 seconds or less book because I got to the point where the Suns were about to be knocked out of the Mavs. Knocked out of the finals by the Mavs, which is surprisingly, because it was just when I started watching the NBA and sort of started falling in love with those Suns, and that series and the Spurs series where Nash got hip checked, like it's just so vivid in my memory. You know, Dirk just going nuts and scoring 50 points in a game to beat us. So it's just like, I just don't want to relive this.
To beat my Suns.
Your sons, not your sons. But
you're beating your Mavericks.
This is
your
like
3 and Barkley's, 15 Mavericks.
Barkley's done he was doing the same thing to Sean Marion in those Suns teams. Like, you know, this is not a new shtick for him.
That's what he's paid to do. But it was funny. I was talking to someone online saying, you know, who said, why is it that sports coverage always gravitates towards having these back in my day, everything was better dudes? And part of it's because of the mechanics of producing television shows is that you want conflict and you want drama and you want discussion and debate, and you have to engineer that. But also part of it's because the audience is generally old and white and conservative and of a sport and wants to be told that it was all better back in the day when they were watching and they were growing up, because that reinforces the prejudices that everyone comes to the forum with.
I'm reading a fascinating book on The Daily Show at the moment, and the way that they sort of really lock into that sort of theory, like those sort of theories. Why is Charles Barkley popular on television? Like they really understand, you know, the psychology behind why Fox News is popular, or why Charles Barkley is popular, or why this is popular, and really not just sort of to mock it, but actually to really understand it and really break it down.
Yeah, I think Charles is, there's no real secret about why Charles is popular. I mean, he was a great player who never won, so he's got people's sympathy in that. He was always outspoken and entertaining, so he always had that element to him. And he's genuinely entertaining and charismatic when he's not doing this old curmudgeon routine. And I think that's why the TNT coverage works is because you've got him, and you've got Shaq who brings something else, and you've got Kenny the Jet who brings something else, and you've got Ernie Johnson who brings something else again, and then you've got Chris Webber and Reggie Miller who you can take or leave, calling the games. And it's actually a really good, and I'm really glad that ESPN have started giving us all the TNT games live as well as their own stuff live.
Well, the interesting thing there is TNT have realised that having one Charles Barkley is fine, but you can't have six of the same character in the same box.
Yeah.
And that's what I reckon Channel 9 hasn't figured out. Like, yes, those Channel 9 guys, they're all one tone.
Yeah, they're not sufficiently differentiated apart from each other. And that's partly because, I mean, obviously Chuck and Shaq and company all come with their, you already know who they are and what character they've got, and they've had their whole careers to chisel that out. But so have all those cricketers. And if they all just end up being matey blokey fucking James Brayshaw clones, what's the point? This is the Balls podcast, folks. This is the longest cold open we've done in a while.
Oh, dear. Well, there's a bit on in the sport. Are the Dallas Cowboys now the favourite to win the Super Bowl, would you say, with Gronkowski being out for the Patriots?
Yeah, this is big because today it was announced that Gronk has damaged himself. He's damaged his back and he's out for the season.
This is his fourth back surgery. Man, yeah. Those guys, like...
Well, he's a big... He's basically a polar bear within a helmet. So he's a big lurching dude.
Can you imagine having four back surgeries by the time you're 27? Like...
Well, he was... Oh. I mean, he'd had that problem in college and there was an insurance payout on the table whereby he could... If he walked away from football and got it paid, he'd have $4 million. But he set that aside and decided to chase it. And he's obviously made a lot more than $4 million since. And I would not say that this is the end of the Patriots by any stretch of the imagination, because they've got
a very smart coaching staff.
And they've also, this is the first year they've had two really good tight ends, because they've also got Martellus Bennett, who's a very good tight end. Different skill set to Gronk, but still, and they've been using them situationally, but. Martellus Bennett can probably carry it, unless it's Michael Bennett. It's one of the Bennetts. The two Bennett brothers are piss funny. They are
not Wayne Bennett.
No. But these two. There was a great profile on them written by Mina Kimes of ESPN of Martellus and Michael Bennett, and they are agent provocateurs. They are piss takers. They are agitators. They have got no time for Roger Goodell or anything, and they just say exactly what they think, and they are funny as shit. So I'd recommend people look up that profile. I just can't remember. I think it's Martellus who plays for the Patriots now. He's moved, and Michael Bennett still plays for the Seahawks. So they've still got that, but it is obviously going to affect the Patriots' offense because Gronk's very important for them. A pass-catching tight end is not... A tight end is kind of a hybrid between a blocker and a runner. And having a really good pass-catching tight end is it like a next-level offensive trick? And there aren't that many really good pass-catching tight ends in the, I mean, in the league. I mean, there's yeah, adequate well, ones, that, but Gronk, that's what Gronk that, was really good
that
at.
That was saying that...
He could run, like, pass, even if and he, block.
If even if he finished his career right now, he'd be sort of like a... Do they have a Hall of Fame?
Yeah, they have a Hall of Fame. And normally, if you've only played sort of 8 years, you're scratching to get in, but he's got a lot of rings. You know, I'm sure he'll get in there. But, yeah, so... But as you say, the Cowboys... it's hard to compare them with the Patriots because, of course, they play in the other conference, so they don't play the same teams as much. The lead teams... in the AFC, which is where the Patriots come from, I hesitate to say this, touch wood, touch perspex, touch anything you can grab hold of, touch cardboard. My Raiders at 9-2 are the form team of the AFC and just keep beating sides they shouldn't be beating. I mean, last weekend they were down... I think they were down, might have been down two scores to the Carolina Panthers late, and they just ran them down. They just keep chucking it and keep running, and we talked about it last week. They keep making these plays late in games to win big games, and it's I don't know how sustainable it is, but they keep doing it.
We played a team in all schools one year where we played, and sort of all the good teams were in our half of the draw. And there was like one superstar Gold Coast team, you know, probably with a whole bunch of guys that were going to go on and play NRL, and, you know, they were just super talented and they were sort of smashing everyone. And then there was us who were just really disciplined and, you know, sort of played the numbers game. And then we ran into, we won all our games and we had the superstar team and this other team to play these Fijians, and they just threw the ball around and we just didn't, like, it just broke our brains. Like, sometimes a team like that will just, you can be an awesome team, just roll through a competition and you run into a team like that and it would just fucking break your brains and drive you nuts because they just don't do what, you can't defend them because they just don't do the conventional thing that you expect to do to defend.
It's not so much that makes the Raiders really good. I mean, the Raiders' blueprint for success isn't that dissimilar to what the Cowboys' blueprint for success is, which was that the Cowboys have a very strong offensive line. So that means their quarterback, and they've had Dak Prescott, who's been their rookie sub for Romo. Dak actually looked, the Thursday night football game was actually the Cowboys versus the Vikings. The Vikings just missed on missed by quite a lot on a 2-point conversion that would have tied the game late. But Sam Bradford sailed the pass over the end of the end zone. But Dak looked indifferent today. It was the first time he's actually looked a bit shit. And it wasn't just because there was getting pressure on him, he just wasn't doing a very good job. But so what the Cowboys have is they've got a very solid quarterback who can run. They've got an exceptionally good running back, and probably one or two of them, and they've got some really good receivers. It's basically what the Raiders have got too. They've built their offense on a really strong offensive line, a couple of really good receivers. Running backs, not as strong. Their defense, not really that strong at all. So sort of a mediocre defense and a very good offense is basically the story of the Raiders. But That's a fun team to get behind. So the form teams in the NFL. It really comes to, I mean, the Patriots. No one's going to wave off. The Raiders have got a fantastic record now. A lot of the other teams in the AFC are kind of in middling form. Like the Steelers are kind of, the traditional powers are kind of weak. And there's entire conferences that are crap, like the AFC South. The over in the NFC, Seattle are staying to click into gear because Russell Wilson, their quarterback, was injured for the first half of the year. He was getting around with this massive knee brace on under his lycra pants. It looked like he had a bottle of, you know, a carton of milk down the leg of his trousers. Last year's Super Bowl finalists, the Panthers, are probably shot. So it's probably, I would say, if I was going to put coin down on it, I would say we're looking at probably a Seattle-Dallas NFC championship game, and crossing fingers here, a Raiders-Patriots. Not that I want to play the Patriots, but I would say the Raiders-Patriots in the AFC championship game.
Which would rate its fucking ass off, I would imagine.
It would. The Raiders have got a lot of fans. It's a bit like that first big championship run that, you know, when Souths came out of their dormancy and started playing well, suddenly you get reactivation of that huge supporter base that's had nobody to sort of get behind for years and years.
Hey, I forgot to mention this when we were doing the NBA, but in the Eastern Conference, third has 10 wins, fourth has 11 wins, and then 10th has 9 wins. So there's one win between third and 10th.
And the top 9 in both the West and the East are over 500.
Yes, yeah.
So it's
yeah,
it's,
Denver have slumped a little bit. They sort of had a nice little run and sort of lost a couple of tight games.
Yeah. And your Lakers are back to 500. Are back to 500 after losing.
Yeah, there was a might have been The Ringer did a very interesting podcast about sort of, you know, where all the teams sat, and they were saying, you know, Denver's got like a really interesting team, but their, you know, their point guard is so patchy. Like, you know,
he'll just Murray.
Mudiay.
Well, Mudiay is slowly being moved. His minutes are slowly going to Murray. It's certainly appearing, and I know there's been some talk from people like Matt Moore, Hardwood Paroxysm on Twitter, saying, you know, whenever you watch Denver, they always look better when Mudiay's not on the floor. And that seems to be backed up by the numbers. But that's another team, I mean, they're further down the path than the 76ers, but they're still figuring out what they've got.
Well, they're a team with a lot of pieces, and the one that Kevin O'Connor threw up was, well, you know, maybe you go to the Wizards and say, you guys completely suck. Here's a whole bunch of draft picks and pieces for John Wall.
Why do you want John Wall? What's John Wall ever done? I think Murray's going to develop into something pretty good. I wouldn't worry too much about their point guard. I would let the Wizards just disappear, because the Wizards are shit. And they're shit for a reason. They've got a whole lot of talent that's not as good as it's advertised. And it hates each other.
Well,
and they've got a coach who hasn't figured out what the fuck they're doing.
Some of the talent can't stay on the park. And, you know.
The Wizards folks are... who Bezo picked at the 5 seed, are 13th. With a 6-11 win record so far.
My theory was, I definitely didn't think Chicago would be that good. I didn't think Atlanta would be that good.
So Chicago are currently third, folks. They're currently 10-7. Whether that's sustainable or not, who knows? They just lost yesterday... on the buzzer to the Lakers.
Without two of their best players. I think Chicago are like Memphis. You know, Memphis won today, but how are they gonna go without Conley for 8 weeks?
6 to 8, yeah. It looks like we're in the January. Do you remember last year?
Do you remember the
zombie Grizz from last year? It didn't matter how many of those fuckers you killed. They just kept shambling towards you. Never doubt the zombie Grizz. They just have a certain... There's a bit like said, you know, there's some ball clubs that have a character to them that just defines the way they play and the way they carry themselves. And that's obviously San Antonio is like that. The Lakers are like that, for good or for ill. And the Grizz are absolutely, it tends to be the small market teams actually, but the Grizz are absolutely that. They,
well, I wonder whether
I don't know
it's
how
the
they're going to do it, but well, they're going to do it.
You know, the anti-team for that is the Clippers. Like, the Clippers always have these hugely talented teams, massively talented teams, but, like, do you trust them to win a final series? Like, someone was saying,
I wouldn't trust them to sit the right way in a toilet seat.
Someone was saying, oh, they've got to be favourite to play Golden State in the conference finals, and I would back them to beat Golden State. And I'm like, are you fucking nuts?
Fucking show me. Show me that they can do, they can get past the... I mean, that's the thing. You'd back the Trailblazers, even as an eight... Well, maybe not as an eight seed against the Warriors, but as a seven... As a... Say the Trailblazers flip with the Grizzlies into the sixth seed and they're playing the Clippers in the 3-6 series. And this Blazers side... I've been going through some defensive issues, but they seem to have ironed them out just recently. I'd be comfortable with the Blazers in that series.
Well, the thing that the Clippers, right, I was thinking about this today. If they were playing an NRL style final series where you played someone different every time,
they'd be Easts. The Clippers are Easts.
I could see them going through a final series like a knife through hot butter. You know, just one game after another. But where you can figure them out and apply some psychological pressure in a seven-game series, I think that's their absolute weaknesses. In one-off games, like the Cleveland game today, where it's very hard for the Demons to come back into the head, they can absolutely go out and beat anyone on their day. No worries. But that it's that psychology of that seven-game series that just seems to get to them after a while.
You're not convincing me they're not Easts.
That's right.
They're media hyped. On paper, they should blow everyone off the field every day of the week. And yet, because they're full of, I mean, Easts are full of representative players. They're full of New South Wales halfbacks and Kiwi forwards and all the rest of it. And yet, you know they'll fall over in the second round of the finals because they just don't have... something. It's some kind of substance. It's some kind of, you know, you could, it's like plasterboard that's just paper. You can stick your finger straight through it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the Grizz are going to turn up with nobody and they're still going to take you to six games because they're going to. It's just what they do.
Well, like the Mavs have crashed this year, but remember the year the Spurs won and I think we were podcasting then and we sort of went, oh, you know, Spurs in four, maybe five.
That was a seven game series with
some real heart stopping moments for the Spurs.
That was the greatest first round of the NBA playoffs in history, because that series went seven. The Thunder series went seven.
The Clips Golden State series as well, I think, wasn't it?
That all happened. That was all the same series. Yeah. That was the Dame Lillard knocking the Rockets out. All of that happened the same year. It was fucking amazing. And then the second round sucked. It just went to chalk. It was just, you know, tick, tock, tick, tock, tick. Good night. Thanks for coming.
I think the second round had like the Spurs just dispatched Portland.
Yeah, in five, I think it was.
But that was another notch in the Clippers sort of anti-story because they had they had Oklahoma City on toast, and remember Chris Paul melted down in the game seven, just like threw the ball away four times in a row or something.
I think, but they were buggered from the. I think there was a lot of emotional currency that they'd spent getting through the Golden State/
The stuff with Sterling.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That was about most because they were getting hammered on it all the time by the media, by their friends and family. Obviously, the Warriors series had gone long. The Thunder series went long. So it was We are getting a long way ahead of ourselves because we are still We are still some 60 games away from starting the playoffs.
Well, I even wanted to go out even further and talk next year. Do you reckon the Spurs are ready to hand the keys of the kingdom to Patty Mills?
No, because he's not quite good enough.
But I think
he's a backup point guard, unfortunately.
Oh, I absolutely think he could start on half the teams in the NBA.
I think he's a backup point guard, and I think that's a. I'm not actually sure he's better than Dele.
Oh no, I think he.
I'd like him to be better than Dele.
I look at a lot of teams with very, very average point guards in the NBA that would pay him more than the Spurs are going to pay him to be their starting point guard.
The problem with Patty isn't his peak performance; it's his median performance.
Mm.
He has great games and he has games where he does not even exist. And I know his minutes are variable depending on
Tony Parker, like that, you've just described Tony Parker.
Well, that's because Tony Parker is, as I mean, Alassan pointed out it a few weeks ago, as washed can get. They're pulling him out of the fucking dishwasher at this stage. He is washed. He is done. He is toast. And when you're that washed, you know, you'll have a spike and then you won't have a spike. And you'll have a spike and you won't have a spike. And that stuff. And Patty has to kind of time his peaks to correspond with Tony's troughs. And they're 15-4. They're not going so badly. They're a game back from the all-conquering, you know, world-destroying Warriors.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether Pop goes to him, we're going to try and turn you into a starting point guard. Because the psychology of playing the backup and starting would be very different, I would imagine.
It seems like it's been a plan that's been going for 5 years, though. Not 5 years, but, you know, he joined them after the lockout, did he not? So that's a while ago.
Yeah, I just, I'm not expecting him to be Steph Curry starting point guard, but I think they're going to have to move on from Parker next year. So do they move on from Parker with him, or do they try and find a young point guard and rebuild around that?
They're going to need a backup to slot in underneath Patty.
Well, they've got that. The guy from Spain, Argentina. There's another. They've got another international guy.
I couldn't tell you what the depth chart looks like for point guards for the Spurs.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, you know, I think Philly would kill for someone of Patty's or Dele's quality. Like, they literally have no one that
can fucking
pass the
ball. But they don't need to kill for them. They just need to trade for them. Or they need to convert Ben Simmons into a point guard, which seems to be the plan.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that's again why I think Mills would be great for Philly, because he could play a normal style pick and roll point guard. And then when Simmons is playing the point, he could go and stand in the corner and knock down threes and everyone would be happy.
Did you see there was a vine of Dwight Howard running the point?
I did see that. Yes, that was very interesting.
It went about as well as you'd expect.
I always had when in that sort of early 2000s rugby league era where you just had, you know, Webke and Rodney Howe and all these guys just bashing
basically
the ball up.
All rugby league teams looked like the 76ers. It was just enormous dudes who couldn't actually do anything with the pill, but they were just enormous.
Yeah, just you would never get two passes off the ruck. Like the first three tackles were just one pass off the ruck. And the one that used to drive me nuts was you kick for touch, right? You get a penalty, you kick for touch. The hooker would pass the ball and this huge human would just run the ball up and just get smashed by the four guys that were coming out of the line to smash him. And if you watch the rest of the line, like no one else would come out and there'd actually be this sort of hole in behind where those four guys came up. And I always had this theory, if you could train Webke to throw like a, you know, like a 20-meter spiral pass, you just tap it and, you know, a meter before he was about to be hit by all these dudes, just throw, you know, a 20-meter spiral pass to the fullback, cutting back into the hole where those four guys would come out of.
So you just come back in again. And what that would, if you did that repeatedly, what that would incline people to do would be try to burgle intercepts, which would generally pull people out the line even further and make it more likely that there would be a cutback gap in the line.
Yeah, just get one forward. Like there's you know, it's like
people were stupid in the early 2000s though.
It's like the batsman who always fancies he can bowl. Surely there's, you know, a couple of prop forwards that like, hey, I can throw a 20-meter spiral pass. Look, watch me, and just, you know, just drill it into them day after day. Like as a shock tactic in a big game, I reckon it just would kill teams. And you know, then sort of the ruck got a little bit more sophisticated as Bellamy came in and sort of changed it up a bit, but. You know, it was almost like clockwork. You'd tap one big guy, and same with the scrums. The scrums are not that different now. You know, goes into the scrum, comes out, and the 5/8 runs directly into the defence, and that's about it.
Rugby league, and if you run, a beautiful game.
Yeah, if you run something different, the defence almost falls over in shock, and you look pretty good. But, one of the interesting things about that 7 seconds or less book that D'Antoni...
His name is not D'Antoni, in case you're wondering, folks. His name is
that's his last name.
D'Antoni.
Michael
D'Antoni. D'Antoni.
So
he's about as Italian as Bizzo. Bizzo is actually an Italian name. Bizzo.
Bizzo. I do cook a lot of fresh pasta and pizza. He would sort of not look at chasing the trends. He would sort of like. He was always looking for.
I saw you caping for D'Antoni in Haralabob Volgaris's mentions, folks. Haralabob is infamous professional gambler who gambles a lot on the NBA and achieved some sort of fame through being a regular guest on Bill Simmons's podcast. And Haralabob was watching the Spurs game and tweeting about it, and Bizzo said, "You know, a lot of people would think, you know, have claimed that D'Antoni's a useless coach." And he basically shot you down and said, look, it's got more to do with the fact that they've got better cattle this year. So suck.
I think it's both.
Of course you think it's both, but nobody else does.
No, you're kidding yourself, aren't you? Like, Haralabob
thinks
done.
You're a moron. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's lovely. Lots of people think I'm a moron. That doesn't mean any of them are right. What I think they've done there is they've found a good match between the way their star player wants to play and then figured out what the coach needs to make that star player be the most effective that he possibly can.
I think there's a lot of stuff going on that doesn't involve D'Antoni and Harden that's also very important. I think Capella has made a huge difference to it. It's not just taking Howard out, who was toxic in his relationship with Harden, but Capella can do a bunch of shit that Howard being a functional human being makes a fucking huge difference. Ryan Anderson makes a banging. I mean, they won that game because Ryan Anderson just kept nailing threes down the stretch.
Yeah, but that totally, like, if you've got D'Antoni as your coach and Harden as your point guard, you want to go out and get Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. Yeah. They're absolutely the players that you want to get.
And this is peak Morey ball because they are shooting 53s a game.
Yeah, and like,
which is to say, they're taking 53 point attempts a game. They're not scoring 53s a game because then they'd have 150 points.
They're making like 40 or 38% team wise, or something like a really high rate at the moment.
Anyway, even be higher than that. Yeah.
I'm not. I wasn't trying to say that it was all down to the coach. I actually think that, and it's D'Antoni's fault as much as the player's fault. But he absolutely was. He should not have taken that Lakers job. That was a bad. Like I know Nash was going there and everything, but that was never going to be a good job for him.
Never taken the Knicks job.
Yeah, the Knicks job was never a good job for him.
Job is bad.
This is a fantastic job for him. This is the perfect job for him. Like, you know, Harden is Nash on steroids, really. But maybe Like Harden's actually a really good passer, and I don't think that was really brought out as much until this year. Like, isn't he averaging like 28 points and 11 assists or some ridiculous amount?
His assist numbers have rocketed.
Yeah, they've just gone nuts.
They're not quite Russell Westbrook level, who's averaging a triple double, but they're going okay.
Mm.
Let's talk about your cricket team.
So, which one's that?
So Bezo Stan were none for 131 on the final day, and they only needed three.
And they went, hey, we've seen those Australia collapses.
And
they
deck was flattening out. The sun was out. It was beautiful, and they collapsed to lose by 138. They lost an even 10 for 100. They lost 9 in the final session. So that rope-a-dope's got a lot of rope.
Yeah, I'm telling
it's
you.
It's a long rope.
Every time they collapse, the Gabba curator goes out and waters the pitch a little bit more.
And they've unchanged the squad. Well, actually, one of the things that should be pointed out is they didn't have Misbah for that test match because he got suspended for slow over rates. And then
No, that's not why. His mother-in-law died. He had to go back to Pakistan for a funeral.
He was suspended as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was suspended for slow over rates. The entire team got fined for slow over rates. In fact, they got more of a punishment for slow over rates than Faf got for fucking taping up the cricket ball with Inshul tape.
Mm. Fair enough, so, too. Slow over rates are way more a problem than making bowlers actually productive.
Because, I mean, I think we agree on that, but there wasn't 5 days of controversy over the fact that they had slow over rates.
Well, that's because the Australian media is fucking stupid.
That's because
Australian media, but you are.
No, don't apologise to them because they're too stupid to understand what you mean. So the first testing between Australia and Bezo Stan is 2 weeks from yesterday.
First we get
three meaningless one-dayers. Well,
why?
They're not meaningless because it's the Chapel Hadley series, which is generally a good stoush, but it's a weird time to be dropping them in. Because New Zealand are in... Well, it's better for New Zealand because they've just come out, they had that quick two-test series, and they're about to go into the... So the starting Sunday is the New Zealand T20 comp. So the New Zealand T20 comp runs basically for December. The Australian T20 comp runs basically for January, if you like, into Feb. So they're already going into a limited overs format. New Zealand don't play as a national team again until Boxing Day, and that's against Bangladesh, so it barely counts.
But what do I know? Oh,
Bangladesh
just beat England.
Bangladesh. Last time they came down here. They got bowled out for 80 in a one-day match, which Baz McCullum basically got himself in like 30 balls.
They're going to need to do
a lot to be competitive here.
Yeah, I fully expect them to lose, but give Bangladesh a little bit of credit. They just beat England in a test series. England are not a crap side.
Yes, they are.
I don't agree with that, but anyway...
Just because they can beat Australia doesn't make them not a crap side. They're fucking terrible. England right now are fucking terrible and embarrassing. Which is great if you're not English.
Yeah.
There are a lot of really bad cricket sides kicking around right now, aren't there?
I would say there's not a really good cricket side.
Yes, there is. It's called New Zealand. No, I can't. I can't carry through on that.
But what I feel sorry for, right, is there's a whole state of flux in the Australian side. Like, would you put money on
Nick
Madison?
No, they're not picking anyone from the state of flux. They're only picking people from New South Wales.
But, like, if you're Glenn Maxwell, right, who wants to – he really wants to play test cricket. So there's a Shield round on this week, but he's off playing white ball cricket.
And he wouldn't have been able to play – up the order anyway for Victoria because Matthew Wade would have put him down the order. And when he complained about it, all the Victorians said, even though Matthew Wade is obviously rorting it, putting himself up the order so that he looks good, so that he'll get picked for Australia, which has happened.
I wish I'd had Darren Berry. Like, Darren Berry teed off on Maxwell and, like, I'm not Maxwell's biggest fan, but I was like, for fuck's sake, Wade's average in first-class cricket is abysmal. It's way below Maxwell's.
Well, they're all teeing off on Maxwell because there's
it's because the code, and you shouldn't talk about your bro in public, man.
But also because there's strong the word is that he's going to go to New South Wales.
Well, he tried to, and he missed the deadline, and Cricket Australia said he couldn't, and they dropped him for the first game, sort of like, you know, because they knew he was trying to get a test spot, and they're like, well, a bit hard to get a test spot from great cricket, buddy.
Which is pathetic, really. I mean, it's all pathetic. It's pathetic little silo-building bullshit that would never happen in New Zealand, or it might happen at county level in England. I don't know. But they've got so many fucking counties, it should hardly matter. But it's got... who really gives a fuck about the fortunes of the Victorian Shield side? Compared to, oh great, you managed to really scored some fucking points over Glenn Maxwell there. Meanwhile, if Maxwell had been a really good cricketer and had been able to perform really well, he might have been the difference between Australia getting fucking annihilated and Australia not getting fucking annihilated. But it's really important that Victoria manages to score those political points there. Good on you. Hashtag Vicks do it better.
If this happened in something like New Zealand rugby, or, you know, like one of those in a sport where...
Yeah, I mean, if it was like Canterbury province burying some young halfback prospect and buggering up their chance to play, I mean, it wouldn't even happen. You know, buggering up the chance to play for the All Blacks. That just wouldn't happen. Because you're trying to win the fucking game.
I can remember there was someone in Super Rugby that was like the third or fourth winger at Canterbury. And
it was already probably better than all the Australians. That's basically the story with the Crusaders.
Well, the Canterbury naturally wanted to keep him because they wanted depth. And New Zealand Rugby just stepped in and said, we actually think this guy is good enough to play for the All Blacks, so you are going to release him and he'll go and play. You know, he'll go and start for Auckland, who, you know, at that stage were not as good, probably still aren't as good.
Yeah, Auckland have had a lot of troubles. What they've done a lot of is that they've loaned players out down here. So Israel Dagg, who's now an All Black of many years standing, got his start playing for the Highlanders. Loan from the Crusaders, effectively. On loan from the Canterbury Rugby Union. And there's been a few others like that too. Often because the Highlanders have the smallest population catchment area, obviously being Otago and Southland, there's also been players that have come down from other provinces. Hawke's Bay had a lot of their players who ended up playing for the Highlanders. So
if
the population redistribution is part of the deal when you've got a non-uniform population distribution, and that's why New South Welshmen go off to play for other states in Australia. Why does it have to be a massive fucking song and dance routine?
Yeah, like if Cricket Australia were an effective organisation, they just would have gone to Victoria. Well, if you're not going to play him, that's not good for Australian cricket, like the Australian team. Yeah. We need Maxwell playing as many first-class games as possible.
Was Maxwell an Australian contracted player at this stage?
Yeah, he is an Australian contracted player. So
Victoria should be pulling their fucking head in.
Yeah, and just... But the thing was, Australia cricket went, oh no, those are the rules. Victoria get to do whatever they fucking want. And it's just like... No, seriously, guys, what's the question is, and it's actually written into the Constitution of Australian Cricket or whatever their sort of mission statement is. Because I can remember an interview with the Queensland Cricket chief executive or CEO or whatever it was when they lost a couple of players to a West Indies tour right before the Shield final. And basically those two, like it was like Hayden and Rackerman or someone, and they basically shrugged their shoulders and went, our mission statement says our main goal is to provide cricketers for Australia's national sides. Yep.
We are a feeder league.
Yeah, the Shield is the fourth goal. You know, if we can win the Shield after we've provided, you know,
I'm guessing all this, of our side guessing, is playing for Australia. Did this happen before or after 1994, 1995?
Yeah, no, it was after their first
right.
Shield.
Right, yeah, okay. So I don't know if they would have been, they would have held that position before 94, 95, because
probably,
they might have
not,
been a little bit more bitter about it. But after 94, 95, they were like, ah, it'll be okay. That's all right.
Yeah,
we're just glad to see Matty getting some work in.
Yeah, but I think they still would have liked to have racked up another Shield win. And I think they actually did. I think they did actually win that year. But I just thought it was really interesting that a guy basically came out in public and said, yeah, we put all this work in as an organisation. We do all this planning. We do all this development. We do all this coaching. And another side comes and raids us and takes all us, our best players, and we lose, and we're happy about it.
But it's not actually another side. It's part of the same organisation because it's all Cricket Australia.
Yeah, it's an overarching side, but
and where does their funding come from?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like they only exist to support that side, but I think Cricket Victoria might have missed that memo.
Well, yeah, that's very very Victorian of them. Shall we talk some other stuff? Shall we talk some Formula One? Just to say that there's been a little bit of a stoush, a little bit of back and forth over the fact that the final round of the Formula One, as we said last week, was coming up between two boring twats who nobody likes in Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg. Having said that, I do have more sympathy for Nico because Lewis is a massive bell and Nico's old man, although Nico's pretty meh and boring, Nico's old man was a fucking legend. He was this kind of walrus, moustached, chain-smoking Finnish dude who drove sideways everywhere. It was like a rally driver in a Formula One car. It was remarkable. But anyway, Nico was ahead on points and all he had to do was finish on the podium. And he did, notwithstanding the fact that Lewis was trying to back him up into the pack behind. Lewis's final lap was 9 seconds off the pace, to the point where Vettel, who finished third behind Nico, said it was like following a bus. It was going so slowly. He parked the bus so much he may as well have been Sunderland Football Club. So the plan was that I think Lewis was hoping that others would get in front or ideally take Nico out, which is a little bit fucking bush league and pissant, but he didn't have a lot of options left to him, but still, it was still kind of bush league and pissant. His problem was that his team was looking at Vettel racing up behind the two Mercs and figured out pretty quickly that Vettel had enough pace to get past the pair of them and got on the blower to Lewis and said, hurry the fuck up or we might lose the Grand Prix entirely. And Lewis said, new phone, who dis? And basically declined to do anything about it. And they said, no, seriously. And every time you heard the radio, you said, like, Hamilton radio, it would be a more senior person to the point where it was the fucking team boss going, Lewis, what the fuck? And he's like, you're part of it, breaking up.
I'm sorry. You're
it's a shit line, man. I'm fucking sorry. I think that, the fucking headphone jack doesn't work on this, and my earbuds, man. Sorry, man. It's really shit.
But the thing is, right? This is what. Like we're talking about it now, but unless he'd taken out, like, unless he'd done something like drive his car into the side of Nico's car,
which would have taken them both out, and Nico would have won. But this is the problem.
Yeah,
because Lewis's hero was Ayrton Senna, who did do that. He literally did that. So If Lewis was ahead on points, it's possible that he would have done that. But he was trying to engineer a situation whereby possibly that would have happened. Nico did go wheel to wheel with Stax Verstappen, which is a really good way to end up in a fence on fire. But they managed to both get away with it. But yeah, he didn't. The problem isn't that he did it. The problem is that he kept doing it when his bosses told him not to. What we're really talking about is a fucking HR issue. Your boss told you to do something repeatedly and you told him to fuck off. So it is and he's done that sort of stuff before. So it's purely an internal HR issue and they should sort it out internally.
This is what makes me laugh is you need to be incredibly competitive to get into something where you're essentially risking your life. I know the risks are lower than what they used to be, but you're still risking your life. So you've got to have a certain amount of you know,
you've got to be a massively competitive, self-involved, narcissistic asshole.
Yeah, that's right. And then you're like, it comes down to one race where you can ignore your bosses. It doesn't matter if you get fired because you know you're going to get another very high-paying job somewhere else anyway, and you could win another championship. And people were surprised.
Well, he probably wouldn't because he's. I mean, he's good, but he's probably not. He's probably in the top 3 to 5 drivers on the grid. But I reckon in equal cars,
he'd get a job somewhere.
He probably would. Yeah. Well, there's lots of other jobs. All the other jobs are full right now. Everyone's under contract. And you're not firing Dan Ricciardo to pick up Lewis Hamilton. You're not. But, I mean, you can see Lewis's point of view. You can also see Mercedes' point of view in that, hey, we have 500 people working on this. We have a $500 million budget. And your ego is telling us, you know, it's your fucking ego that's going to determine whether we win this race or not. I don't think that's how this fucking works, bro. You know, you do what you do, but you can't do what you do without us. So what the fuck? We pay you lots of money, do your fucking job. And that was essentially the message of Jackie Stewart, who was also a 3-time world champion, who said Lewis was carrying on like a ballerina. I think the word he was looking for was prima donna, but he ended up with ballerina. It's worth remembering that, I mean, Jackie Stewart's quite old, but
his
attitude to teammates was slightly different. I mean, he had a young French teammate who he kind of mentored in his final years in racing, and then he was he was going to retire as, you know, he'd won the championship, his third world championship in 73, and he was going to retire. He was going to, on his finishing his 100th Grand Prix, and his teammate had a huge crash and died on his final race. So Jackie's attitude to teammates is different to perhaps some other people's attitudes to teammates. Mm. But so Jackie Stewart thinks he's a ballerina. Vettel thinks he's a bus driver. Martin Brundle was the most on the Sky commentary was so miserable when Rosberg won. It's almost like his dog had died. But the most impressive response was from Rosberg, who said, "Why don't we stop talking about this? I don't give a fuck. I won the championship. Can you all just fucking leave Lewis alone? I don't care. It's fine." You know,
yeah. Who gives a fuck?
I've been drunk for half a week. I don't care.
Yeah.
And this weekend we get to do it all again with the V8 Supercar final, which is another two teammates in Van Gisbergen and Wind Cup facing off on the streets of Sydney Olympic Park for the last time. Thank fuck, because it's a horrible track. Next year, this is the final.
It goes to Newey, doesn't it?
It goes to Newey. Monaco with a coal port. Although the nebulous. So the state government have done financial modelling and they reckon it'll bring $57 million into the economy. These claims are always a bit nebulous and you never quite know how big their catchment is. And it's already been challenged by, so Radio National had a story out. And that's part of the reason why the Sydney 500 or the Taxpayers 500, as some people were calling it, is coming to an end. But so that's on. Van Gisbergen, if he wins this, is going to have had a hell of a year because he would have won the Bathurst 12-hour for McLaren. He would have won the European Blancpain GT Series for McLaren. He would have finished second at Bathurst. He would have won the Pertec Endurance Cup, which is the Sandown, Bathurst and Gold Coast Triple Crown. And he would have won the championship. So if he...
He's a fairly... varied, talented driver, then.
He has a lot. Well, he's an all-rounder, which is kind of cool. So that will be quite cool. It was interesting. There was a story recently, because he had an infamous breakup with Stone Brothers, who were a Ford team that he used to race for, when they got taken over by Erebus. And there was a whole story, because he basically went into retirement rather than race for this team, and then he got another contract. And there was a huge court case and all the rest of it. And he's had an interesting story this week where he said, look, I really should have handled that differently. I should have just taken the year off and not driven. There was a whole lot of stuff in the media about me having depression and not, you know, all the rest of it. And none of that was really true, but various people represented it as such. So it's if you're interested in the backstory of Van Gisbergen, it's probably worth a read to that.
Before we go, I don't know if you saw this, but did you see Amanda Wellington's first ball in one-day international cricket?
It's very unlikely that I would have seen Amanda Wellington's first ball because I don't know what an Amanda Wellington is.
So she plays for the Australian women's one-day side. She's a leg spinner. And she bowled this,
what,
this
like ball. Like Draymond Green's a leg spinner. He's like spinning his legs in the face of people.
More in the... I was about to say Shane Warne, but Shane Warne's not really a role model you want to follow. More in the Stuart McGill... Well, maybe as a leg spinner, not as a thing. Anyway, she's 19.
So she's Stuart McGill style. So she's a closet Tory who drinks a lot of wine.
She seriously bowled one of the best spinning deliveries I have seen in any cricket in ages. Just drift, hit the deck, turned, beat South Africa's best batsman cold, and Healy's just had the bails off.
Alyssa Healy.
Before you, Alyssa Healy, not Ian
the
Healy.
Less annoying Healy.
But like, I just looked at her and went, "Oh man, this makes me want to watch a whole lot more of definitely whatever's televised." I'll be and the
I think
only
it's live streamed
was,
anyway.
Yeah, it's live streamed, but it's only one camera.
Oh, so it's like 1990s Shield coverage.
Yeah, so it's sort of like sort of slightly behind the keeper. And all I was waiting for was the other angle from behind the bowler so you could see where it pitched and bit because, fuck, it spun a long way. But
you should have bowled it from the other end and you would have got that.
I'll send you the link to it. It is, like, as far as first international deliveries go, it's right up there. It's
Gatting ball style. Get some of this up.
The only thing is that it's a stumping, not a bold, I guess, is that, you know, that bold is just so much more dramatic. Like,
particularly if they leave it outside their leg stump. That was the thing that made that one dramatic.
I actually think the best ball I've ever watched bold was just for the context and the crushing depression that it brought was Harris's ball to Cook. You know, first ball after lunch. You know, Australia had gone all out. Bailey had sort of teed off on them. And then, you know, it was sort of like, well, you know, let's see what England will do on this pitch. You know, this is the expected fight back. You know, Cook really values his wicket. You know, he hardly ever gets out. And Cook is known for never letting the ball hit the stumps. And then Harris just came and bowled that ball that was just like the perfect pace delivery, cutting back and hitting the top of the off stump.
Did Cook leave that one?
Because he thought it was going outside off stump.
Sort of giving it the windy waft and poking his cock at it and it castling him.
Well, I think it pitched well outside off and came back in at him, you know, and just, you know, just, what do you get taught when you're a kid bowling?
Just pinged the off-bail off, didn't it?
Just try and hit the top of off stump. Try and hit the top of off stump. And Harris bowls his ball. It's like perfect. You know, pitches, takes the top of off stump as the batsman leaves it. Yeah, I love that ball. The only problem is it's got terrible, terrible Channel 9 commentary on it on YouTube.
Of course it does. just two more things in the realms of football. Serial cup final failure, Tim Cahill finally won something. This is a man who played cup finals for the likes of Millwall and probably Everton and various other clubs and just kept losing. Scored the winner in the FFA Cup final, which apparently is a thing, against Sydney FC. And it was outrage in the media that the Sydney FC fans weren't unilaterally cheering Tim Cahill. It's like these people aren't aware that the players on the other team... you don't cheer for. It doesn't matter what they've achieved at international level. For the time that they're wearing that opposition uniform, they're the bad guy, and you boo them, and you sing songs about how they're only here for the money. That's the point of fucking club football.
Well, I've got a nice little interesting callback to the NFL. So there was an interesting story today about the NFL's media policy and how they've cracked down this year on
social media sharing. And vines and GIFs and things.
Yeah.
Which is madness, and they know it's madness. They're getting, you know, NBA is running rings around them in that context because the NBA has a much more open policy.
Well, this article was interesting in the fact that they stated, and it might not be true, but it reads correctly because it sort of it makes sense, is that the NFL, what they're worried about is that you will get a very smart organization that has a very good social media crew, and they will build a following for that team. And they don't want people following teams. They want people following the NFL.
And that's the NFL's obsession with the Shield. It has to be on their terms. And yeah, ironically, their Shield is much more hated than any other sport. If you think people have got much more allegiance to the NBA as a Shield, as a league, as a logo, as an organization, than they do to the NFL. And it's precisely because of this shit.
Look, I'm obviously not a lifelong Suns fan, but I am, like, I'm a Suns fan. You know, the Suns are my team.
As long as you've watched the game, you've been a Suns.
I've been a Suns fan, and like, you know, I don't like Charles Barkley. He's an ex-Sun. Like, I just have to accept that I'm a Suns fan. But my team is shithouse. It doesn't mean that I stop watching the NBA, because the NBA is really good at sort of saying, hey, even though your team's crap, we've got a lot of other interesting stuff. Yeah. And when your team is inevitably good again, then you can enjoy your team being good. And we want you to be invested in your team. But we also think that our product is good enough that you will watch other things that will interest you within the NBA.
Also, there were so many games that there'll be a day where your team isn't shit. There'll be a game where they'll beat somebody important and it'll be great. And that's also one of the reasons that social media works so well for the NBA, is because you've got so many games on at the same time. I mean, the NFL has this on a Sunday afternoon where they might have 8 or 9 games on at once. They invented NFL Red Zone, which, as we've discussed before, has ruined everybody for watching actual NFL games, because they're much more boring than watching NFL Red Zone, which is just like, it's just like a sex compilation NFL, where people are just rooting. That's a bad comparison, but that's why social media is so important for basketball, is because you're watching one game, you don't know what's going in the others, and then they'll throw the highlights at you. They'll show you the Anthony Davis windmill dunk.
Well, like, if I'm at work and following Twitter
and pretending not to have a little screen in the corner that shows you the game.
Oh, like, I can't do that because they monitor fucking bandwidth and stuff. But if I'm at work and following Twitter, I don't come home feeling like I've missed out on the day's NBA. Like, I get to see the big dunks. I get to see, you know, I get to see all the stuff. You know, and this is what I've said about cricket for ages, is like, there'll be a really interesting series, but because the ICC has a stick up its ass,
because they decentralize the rights, they don't hold them centrally, and they don't make decisions for the good of the game. Each of the two competing boards just sort it out between themselves.
Yeah.
It never actually works out.
All right, you got anything else?
I want to finish on one more thing, and that's the Brazilian side that I lost, that went down in the plane crash in Bolivia, which is an awful tragedy. And we've seen football grounds around the world where they've had moments of silence, and there was a remarkable scenes from the ground where they were supposed to play. So this is Chapecoense is the team, and I've murdered the pronunciation of that, I apologize. They're just a middle of the road Brazilian side. They'd been promoted up into the top league from like the fourth division, full of journeymen. They've been compared to Leicester City in terms of their journey. I think that's probably a little bit facile and a little bit unfair for them at this stage, but they were playing they'd made it to the final of the Copa Sudamerica, which is kind of the equivalent of the Europa League, the sort of the second tier South American club tournament. And they were flying off to play that game, and they never made it. And it's awfully sad. It brings back memories of the Manchester United air disaster in Munich, where they lost an entire generation of players there, and also Torino, who also had the same sort of thing. So I just wanted to pour a little out for Força Chapa, and just be one of millions worldwide making memory of that.
Mm. All right. And let's leave it there.
Catch you next week, folks.
See ya.